Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day, and welcome to episode 205 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm greatly pleased to host Jessica Pulliner, President and CEO of Relayer, the industrial IoT powerhouse. Jessica is a transformational leader with a history of leading geographically dispersed and culturally diverse industrial and tech businesses ranging from approximately $200 million to $1.5 billion in annual revenue. She currently serves as President and Chief Executive Officer of Relayer, the industrial IoT powerhouse, a technology company that harnesses the power of data to generate meaningful business outcomes. Relayer was acquired by the Munich Re Group, a $55 billion global reinsurer in 2018. Before joining Relayer, Jessica served as the president of Molding Solutions, a prominent business unit in the plastic injection molding industry, leading approximately 2,200 global employees and responsible for 12 global manufacturing locations. Prior to this role, she held global general management roles with Thermo King, a business of Ingersoll Rand, and then Trane Technologies, as well as regional leadership roles at Caterpillar Inc. across general management, marketing, sales, operations, distribution, and aftermarket and connected solutions. Jessica began her career as a lawyer, where she focused primarily on corporate law and mergers and acquisitions. She holds a Juris Doctorate from Marquette University Law School and a bachelor's degree from Vanderbilt University, and completed her Certificate of Management Excellence with Harvard Business School. She is an endurance athlete in the workplace and out, an avid speaker on gender parity and unconscious bias, in addition to as a service business models, technology, and the role of Industry 4 and Industry 5. Jessica, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast today.
Ken, thank you for the warm welcome and for hosting me on this podcast. In preparation for the podcast, I've listened to the series, and it's clear that I'm in really good company.
Thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate it. I do agree that you're a great addition to the cadre of industry leaders and thought leaders that we've had in this podcast. So it's great. I know we got a chance to meet each other formally in Barcelona at the IoT Solutions World, where we did a Industry 5 panel. And I must say, I was very impressed with the speeches that you gave and the work you've been doing with Relayer. So I'm looking forward to jumping into that. Of course, we always want to start with our really branded question there. And that is, what would you consider to be your digital thread? In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey.
And it's really a thought-provoking question. And my initial reaction after some good thought was that my digital thread has been shaped, of course, by my varied experiences in the boots-on-the-ground industrial world. It's rooted in the push for Industry 4.0. But actually, I think my digital thread started earlier. As you mentioned, I began my professional career as a lawyer. And when I was a young lawyer in the United States, the federal rules of civil procedure were updated to include electronic discovery. And this was really a big deal at the time. It meant that in court cases, our clients would be forced to produce emails, text messages, and even preserve something called metadata. It caused a lot of flurry in the legal world. And I remember thinking and endeavoring at the time, what could we do to make this new rule easier and less burdensome for our clients? If I fast forward later, I transitioned from a law firm to work in-house and then to the business world. And it wasn't so long ago in my various industrial experiences that digital transformation signified ERP conversions or CRM implementation for the various businesses that I led. We moved on to sensor technology, platforms, smart factories, and 3D printing. And we understood that data was only as good as what you did with it. And often we were not creating value for our customers or ourselves with it. But one of the themes that stands out the most for me, and I think influenced why I was intrigued to join the tech world, is the difficulties of addressing customer readiness around IoT implementations, in particular in the industrial space. Based on my experience, there is a clear need to educate and demonstrate value when we face customers. And similar to when I was a lawyer starting my career with eDiscovery, I committed to making customers' digital journeys simpler, easier, more plug and play than what actually initially meets the eye.
Nicely done, Jessica. I asked the question very open-ended in terms of digital thread. And as you said, you've listened to a lot of podcasts and people tend to answer it different ways. I would have never guessed going all the way back to eDiscovery as being the beginning of your thread there. So, and I love the way you've already woven it into a story. So I'm looking forward to, of course, the rest of the conversation. I really was intrigued by your career trajectory, corporate counsel to CEO, from industrial to tech. It seems to me your crossover role was at Caterpillar in 2011, moving from corporate counsel to commercial sales leader. What's inspired that change for you?
It's a great question, Ken, and a good story as well, too. I worked actually for a surface and underground mining company called Bucyrus that we sold to Caterpillar for almost $9 billion in 2011. And I loved working for Bucyrus as a corporate counsel. I was able to work on commercial transactions, M&A, compliance, real estate, and of course, corporate work. We were a small and scrappy legal team globally. And as we were finalizing the antitrust clearance, I was offered an opportunity to run a mining sales and support team in Latin America for Caterpillar by one of the senior Bucyrus leaders. And I spent a few weeks trying to convince this leader that I couldn't lead a sales team. I was a lawyer, after all, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. And at that point, moving to Miami didn't sound so awful to me. So I agreed somewhat begrudgingly to flip over to the dark side and to join the business. And the change, I guess, was really inspired by that big push. And as a separate aside, it's interesting that former Bucyrus executive who pushed me over to the dark side now is actually the CEO of one of our customers today at Relayer. So it's a very small industrial world in that sense as well.
It really is, although I might take exception to what you're calling the light and dark side. Having been in business all my life, and you know, lawyers serve a lot of purposes and most of them are a challenge. So I was impressed. So as you talked about going to Caterpillar, regional leadership roles in Latin America, then you went on to a global general management role with Thermo King in Brussels, Belgium, and subsequently as president of Molding Solutions, a division of Barnes Group based in southern Germany. Let me ask, what was your general remit across these companies and of what are you most proud?
It's another great question. So I've been very fortunate to have had challenging positions in these large U.S. public companies, some of which you just named. At CAT, I had the opportunity to serve as district manager and country manager based in Panama, responsible for a multi-billion dollar portfolio in the region. I was also fortunate to lead a large team in the aftermarket at Caterpillar, a business unit that was newly created. And it was in this role that I gained a very healthy appreciation for the parts and service business and also the power of connected assets. From CAD, as you mentioned, I was responsible for a global business within Thermo King that needed a turnaround. And we achieved this and certainly drove record growth as well. And then in my last role at Barnes, I was hired to drive growth across a large global business of more than 2,200 employees in the plastics industry. The buck stopped with me for the business. And in such a complicated industry with highly engineered technology, we focused heavily on automation and smart factories. So I think what I'm most proud of and the consistent theme across the different roles is really the growth we achieved for our shareholders and also the value that we created for our customers. And last, of course, the people that I impacted. So I'm proud of the number of people that I worked with at Caterpillar and Thermo King that I continue to work with today and enjoy seeing them grow and develop as executives over the years as well.
So all of this, of course, culminated in you coming to lead Relayer in 2022. How did your prior leadership prepare you for Relayer and what attracted you to the company?
Yeah, to be frank, I wasn't looking for a new role. I enjoyed the breadth of my responsibilities at Barnes, driving growth in six companies that had been acquired in the last 5 years by Barnes and learning about the injection molding and plastics industry. It actually took me a little bit to warm up to the idea of leaving the industrial world and joining a tech company. What attracted me to Relayer was the impact that I thought I could create coming from the world of its customers and its partners. I feel comfortable speaking the same language and understanding the pain points of our customer base at Relayer. I ran much larger and more complicated industrial businesses and knew that I would bring operational rigor to the company. I also have a strong appreciation for Relayer's parent company, Munich Re, and was actually captivated by the CEO of Hartford Steam Boiler's vision for industrial IoT.
That's interesting, that last one. I must say we had a similar experience. I believe Hartford Steam Boiler acquired a smaller IoT platform a couple years before Munich Re did Relayer. I forget the name of it, but it was interesting. They were the first insurer slash reinsurer to really explore IoT as a way of establishing real-time information, if you will, flow. And so we've always seen Munich Re as a forward company. You could say as forward-looking as John Deere is to agriculture, as an example, right? There's always a leader who, you know, who gets it and really pushes it forward. So I think good choice to end up in the company. Let me ask, you refer to Relayer as the industrial IoT powerhouse, so a technology company that harnesses the power of data to generate meaningful business outcomes. The value proposition sounds great, but what does it mean in practice?
And what this means for me in practice is that we are putting making a business impact at the forefront of what we do. And we also consider the pragmatic solution for it. I know you understand the power of data, and data is our currency at Relayer. What we strive for is connecting technology to make a meaningful and, of course, measurable business impact for our customers and partners in industrial IoT.
So what have been some of your notable use cases and wins?
We found success in areas that we have honed in on, in particular in the predictive maintenance space, namely for rotating machinery, such as motors, pumps, gearboxes, for elevators, and for equipment as a service. For rotating motors, our system has demonstrated an ability to pick up several failures weeks to several months before they occur. These events not only save maintenance and production dollars, but they also allow assets to run greener. A well-maintained asset, of course, is more energy efficient. And in some cases, they also help to protect safety and the well-being of employees. For elevators, we've shown that we can monitor elevator door system health and anomalies. And doors are actually responsible for 7 of 10 breakdowns, along with a digital twin that indicates the most probable root cause of active alerts. For equipment as a service, we have end users who have purchased machines from our partners in a pay-per-use model and are seeing much better productivity. We've also had a few earlier use cases in the predictive space, grounded primarily in anomaly detection and air preheaters and power generators. These use cases gave us some good early learnings on how to effectively identify downtime events and also pinpoint the underlying cause for the anomalies. We've channeled these learnings into our current product offerings and, of course, continuously seek improvement with them as well.
That's interesting. You sit right between, I'll say, generalized industrial IoT platforms, as an example, and full-stack service solutions, and certainly much more to that. How do you know when an organization is ready to adopt your solution, especially the way you provide it in full-stack? And what are some of the best practices you've seen in realizing that potential value?
And it's really a great question, and one that I continue to learn on more as we move forward aggressively in the market. In general, I think we need a few strong pushes to ensure a company is ready to adopt one of our solutions. One push, for example, is from the company's senior leadership, who understands or at least has a senior leader or board member that understands and believes in technology and value creation from it. Another push that I think is helpful is to have actually the market push. With heightened competition, a change in ownership, perhaps more receptive to SaaS revenue, driving organizations forward and technology in general. An organizational readiness, we see success in realizing potential value with companies that understand, maintain the status quo in terms of organization and go-to-market approach doesn't work for adopting new tech solutions. There is a lot of change management in industrial businesses that goes into adopting tech solutions, as we as well as you know full well. Other best practices that we see are customers that are willing to pilot and adopt the mentality of fail fast and learn faster and try not to address every possible use case, but really focus in on those few critical options.
So you mentioned earlier as a service, and I know this is an area that you guys really have specialized in. We've certainly heard about as a service for several years. From your perspective, where are most industrial OEMs on that maturity curve of moving to as a service offerings?
I agree with you that for most industrial manufacturers, the term as a service or equipment as a service is not a novelty. It's been the subject of various speaking engagements that I've done, including what you mentioned in the opening, but at the IoT World Congress earlier this year in Barcelona, and then again in Sweden this March with the ASG Group. The shift from a one-off sale of capital goods or CapEx to recurring revenue streams based on equipment usage or output has been a common practice in some industries for several years, starting with, of course, the well-known Rolls-Royce power-by-the-hour model. I believe most industrial companies are on a digital transformation journey that is certainly advancing at a greater speed now. When I started my career, we focused on selling a product. We started to talk about bundling the product with spare parts, and then we even dove into developing increasingly sophisticated service contracts with time. Then digital came into play, and we started to figure out how to connect our solutions and leverage data to improve uptime. I think this is part of the journey towards equipment as a service. But in general, I think equipment as a service is moving from, say, a niche alternative to becoming a much more strategic imperative for industrial companies. And we see the increased interest in our offering as well. From my perspective, it's the next step on that transformation journey. And it really is a business model transformation.
It is. It's very much an end state. We talk about providing products eventually, putting value-added offerings with us from an OEM perspective, and then ultimately moving to some form of product as a service. I know a lot of OEMs who talk about it. I know some boards of OEMs who tell us we should never mention that in a conversation. And so it seems that it's still early on the journey for most OEMs in that regard. And I was impressed by listening to your speech in Barcelona, how you guys have set yourself up to equip and accelerate that digital transformation journey for those OEMs. And that's the question. Now, you've been on a journey at Relayer to productize the business. What does this mean for the organization's focus?
You're absolutely right that we've been on a very recent journey of productizing our business and focusing in on the critical few products. What this means is that we're moving away from some of the startup mentality of being everything to everyone and focusing in on a few key verticals where we have experience and expertise. There are three domains, which I mentioned earlier as well, relevant for us: rotating equipment, elevators and smart buildings, and lastly, of course, equipment as a service, again, which is more of a business model that's asset agnostic, but really the domain knowledge being in the business model. And it is not a trivial shift for our organization that has, for a significant part of its existence, focused on a horizontal platform play. So we've been required to rework our technology platform, our team setup, technology skills, positioning, and selling. Today, our technology platform now offloads most of the complexity around collection and storage of IoT data to the underlying cloud provider and focuses now on a data-driven design that accelerates AI work and moves data to the foreground of everything that we do. Team boundaries and focus have been redrawn. And it really is a meaningful shift in our engineering culture. There's a few reasons why productization makes good sense from my perspective, including, for example, that we see a market-wide shift. So hyperscalers are becoming, in essence, de facto IoT platform vendors. Market incumbents are moving up the stack. Also, from our perspective, horizontal plays don't scale well in development and maintenance. There's no upper limits on complexity, and it brings too much uncertainty around cost and scope. I think hyperscalers also are starting to recognize this and are thus focusing on an ecosystem play, incentivizing IoT companies to develop solutions and tackle more domain-specific complexity. They sell their IoT platforms to IoT companies rather than to their end customers. So all in the last year, we've really taken a step back and decided to focus on productizing the business and focusing in on those few critical areas or few critical verticals of our business.
Sounds like you've already had quite an impact on the business since joining them in 2022. I'm curious, so when you're not running Relayer or physically running as an endurance athlete, which I'm very impressed with, you are an avid speaker on gender parity and unconscious bias. Can you tell us a bit about your work here?
Sure, and I appreciate, Ken, the opportunity to allow me to speak to one of my passions. For the last years in industrial companies, I did a lot of work mentoring other women, sponsoring employee resource groups, talking candidly about my experiences growing up in the industrial world, advocating for women in line leadership roles. And I even started to do a series that I called He Said, She Said, which were sessions with some of my leaders where men and women would share their often very different perspective on the same topic. What I realized with these sessions is that men and women often experience the workplace differently. Around the same time, I was connected into a senior Caterpillar executive, Bonnie. And Bonnie and I put our heads together on a customer trip to Chile almost 10 years ago and realized that if we did not move the needle with men, we would not advance our organizations. Given that almost all of executive leadership and even leadership in general at that time was male. So we collaborated on a book published in 2017 and still available today on Amazon. The book is called Unskirting the Issues, A Guide for the Well-Intentioned Man, and is intended to provide tips and tricks for men on how to better work with women. Since the book, and really even before the book, I've done a variety of external speaking engagements and hosted trainings, of course, on unconscious bias and gender inclusion.
You know, all of your topics there really are relevant to men and women generally working in probably any arrangement, but man, they really take on a sharp point when you talk about industrial and tech companies, and especially those crossover ones between the two. As you know, we have Jane Arnold as one of our venture partners, and she comes from a background of Covestro and Stanley Black & Decker, and she is also an advocate for gender parity discussions and plays a very active role in that. So it intrigued me when I saw that you had a similar passion in that, and especially as you know, relevant as this is to industrial. So in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
It's a great question, Ken, and I am a learner and certainly on an endless continuous improvement journey. I've been so fortunate to work and interact with tremendous people in the industrial world and private equity and also the tech worlds. And I make a point to genuinely maintain connections. I get great energy from my network and from interactions with smart, interesting, and provoking people. I'm also a voracious reader, so I've been devouring books on agile and managing software developers recently, and I also just finished Angela Merkel's biography. And I'm now starting to tune into podcasts more often and certainly open to recommendations and plugs on podcasts.
Excellent. Well, obviously, Digital Thread, I think, is a pretty good one, especially our most recent speaker, so highly relevant. So, Jessica, thank you for sharing this time and insights with us today.
And thank you for asking me to join and for the thoughtful questions. It's been my privilege to be here with you and certainly with your listeners as well.
No, thank you so much. It has been a privilege to have you. This has been Jessica Pullner, President and CEO of Relayer, the industrial IoT powerhouse. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. Thank you, and have a great day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archive versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.